Hello. This is our podcast for our class number 19. And in this class, we finished up proximate cause and finished up our discussion of the cause of action for negligence. Of course, negligence needs damages somewhere, but we most likely will not spend much, if any, time specifically on damages. Just know that, you know, again, negligence is in the air. It has to cause some damage. And, you know, we pretty much covered that a lot. So what we're really talking about now here is just finishing up our discussion of how to limit liability for a negligent action by the policy question of proximate cause. And remember, proximate cause is, it's a kind of hybrid law. In fact, of course, we have got a lot of policy legal reasons that we say limit liability, and it's going to be a question of fact whether the facts are present that fall into these rules. Again, when we say rescuers are foreseeable, it's going to be a question of fact whether somebody was a rescuer. You know, but as always, when we talk about proximate cause, courts will spend more time, will get more involved in deciding things as a matter of law than we've seen in the past. So proximate cause duty related, because they're both limitations on liability. And the question comes, sometimes they're not that easy to distinguish. And you see this very vividly in the Paulsgraf case. Here, Judge Cardozo, clearly did not want to find liability. He didn't even think there was, you know, he didn't see anything particularly wrong with the actions of the railway. Sure, they manhandled the Italians a little bit, but he didn't think that there was any real breach of their duty of reasonable care. But so he had to, in some way, he had to decide no duty, because under Polemus, which was the law at the time, he couldn't decide this on a proximate cause question. So he had to decide no negligence, and he decided it on a duty question, no duty to Mrs. Paulsgraf. Now, of course, everything that we've talked about says, you know, when you're doing something, that is running a train, you got to do it with reasonable care. You're under duty to everybody. Certainly, she was a passenger, so it was a very strange rationale for him to say no duty to her, and he very much couched it in a kind of a proximity statement. Instead of saying the action is running a train, the negligent action was the manhandling of the Italians, and that just did not, you know, if there was any negligent action, it was towards the Italians and not generally running the train. Well, again, had Wagon Mound been the law at the time, they could have very easily used this as a foreseeability of the plaintiff as a proximate cause question rather than as a duty question. But that is how it's come down over the years to be seen at, is not necessarily a foreseeable plaintiff for duty, but foreseeable for proximate cause. Of course, Paulsgraf, and we saw in that Wagner case, he wasn't always going to be so rigid on unforeseeable plaintiff. In Wagner, there was negligence on the part of the train for throwing the brother off the train. The other brother comes along to rescue him and is injured in the rescuing. And Paul Scruff says, well, we always know that rescuers are foreseeable. That's just a rule of thumb. So it was foreseeable. We can't say he's an unforeseeable plaintiff because it's foreseeable that he would come and rescue his brother. So he was not that rigid in terms of his limitation on liability. When we looked at Kinsman, we saw kind of a hybrid. The question there was the liability to the plaintiffs who had their land flooded on the twisty turny Buffalo River, and the land was downstream from the negligent dock owner and upstream from the negligent bridge owner. And the court had no problem in saying, well, it was foreseeable. This injury and these plaintiffs were foreseeable to the ship owner and the bridge owner, but questionable about foreseeable to the dock owner. And the court made an interesting statement. If you're, you know, negligent, if it's foreseeable that you could have some big injury, and if it's really foreseeable that you could have some little injury, and barely foreseeable that you have some big injury, you shouldn't be allowed to get be free of the big injury because just of the level of foreseeability. A little bit of a policy decision coming out there. Basically, it was sort of the same action. I think that court was not too interested in eliminating, relieving the dock owner from liability, but they had a very interesting way of deciding it. And of course, Kinsman 2, no relief for pure economic loss, no matter how foreseeable it is the breach was closed. Of course, it's foreseeable that people would lose, when people, the business owners would lose business because people couldn't cross the bridge to get to them. Nonetheless, line drawn around pure economic loss. Then we moved over. So we finished with proximate cause and hence negligence. Closed the book on that. And then we moved over to affirmative defenses. And remember, this isn't on the midterm, although it will certainly be on the final. I did want to get started with the idea of complete shift away from looking at the responsibility of the defendant. Now the mirror turns around to look at the plaintiff's actions. And an affirmative defense is just a regular defense is just saying, I didn't do it. An affirmative defense is saying, well, maybe I did it, maybe I was negligent, but so were you, so was the plaintiff. So it's making a charge, an affirmative charge. And we can see that, of course, in lots and lots of cases. There's going to be negligence on both sides. You know, there's rarely one entirely blameless plaintiff. There's usually fault on both sides. How does the plaintiff become the plaintiff? They, you know, get to the courthouse first, or they have the most damages, you know, the most to lose. And, you know, the jury makes an apportionment at the end under comparative negligence, makes an apportionment of negligence of each party. This wasn't always the case. Under contributory negligence, the negligence of the plaintiff was a complete bar to any action. Virtually all jurisdictions have now adopted comparative negligence, so the negligence of the plaintiff is just compared with the negligence of the defendant. Depending upon your jurisdiction and the statute of your jurisdiction which adopted comparative negligence, the negligence of the plaintiff may make no difference whatsoever. That's in pure comparative negligence. No matter what, if the plaintiff is 90% negligent at fault and the defendant only 10% at fault, you still go ahead. That doesn't bar the plaintiff from recovering. Why would a 90% plaintiff sue? Because they had huge losses. It's better to get 10% of your loss than nothing. So pure comparative negligence, like our New York statute, and this is where reading the statutes comes in important, is not going to be a bar to liability. The other two types of statutes are called modified, and they then branch out into two types of modified statutes. One which says it's okay if the plaintiff has negligence and that plaintiff's negligence is equal to the defendant's negligence, like say 50-50, equal or less. The other statute says, the other kind of modified statute says it's not okay if it's equal. It has to be less. So 49-51, for example. The New Jersey statute is an example of, the Wisconsin statute that we had as an example of equal equals okay. The other kinds of statutes that'll say it has to be less, it will say cannot be greater than, must be less than, something like that. So the jurisdictions with modified really mean that you have to, the lawyer has to know be able to evaluate the strengths and weaknesses of your case before going ahead. Because, of course, you may be out of luck if your client's negligence is seen to be the same or even more than the negligence of the defendant. Pure comparative negligence? No, you can always go forward. So when we meet again next Monday, we're going to talk about continue talking about these comparative negligence statutes, how they're treated, how comparative negligence is treated with multiple defendants, and then talk about what actions on the part of the plaintiff can be compared with the actions of the defendant.